All right, my friends, thanks for tuning into the podcast, where, as always, we'll discuss the professional literature and the evidence-based protocol as they relate to the effective treatment of clinically significant anxiety symptoms. I'm Chris Lines, licensed psychotherapist and OCD spectrum disorders treatment specialist, and this, well, this is OCD Straight Talk. This podcast is made possible by NoCD. NoCD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. NoCD therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention, or ERP therapy, the gold standard treatment for OCD. With NoCD, you can do virtual, live face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists, and they accept most major insurance plans. To find out more about NoCD, visit nocd.com. That's nocd.com to book a free 15-minute call. For people in the state of Kentucky, you can go to kentuckyocd.com. That's kentuckyocd.com and book a session with me. I mean, I've had a lot of people through the years say, I have anxiety, but not OCD. And this kind of distinction, I think on a practical level makes pretty good sense. Like I personally can relate to the idea that I have anxiety, but not OCD. And the reason I can relate to it, and I think a lot of times the reason that people say it, is because, you know, we're thinking about these diagnostic categories through the lens of a stereotype. You know, OCD is like this condition relative to repetitive behaviors, whether it's lock checking or it's turning light switches on and off, or a kind of like hand washing ritual that gets done again repeatedly. Whereas anxiety is more like some kind of overactive alarm system. And these are the people that are your worry warts, right? Or these are the people that are constantly having panic attacks. And the distinction between the two, OCD, that is to say, and anxiety on a practical level, I think makes pretty good sense. And I think that you can further parse the two because like people with generalized anxiety disorder, for example, they don't tend to do a lot of these repetitive behaviors. You don't traditionally see them doing really very much at all in the way of what we might call rituals or compulsions. Same thing with people with panic disorder. You know, they have these ongoing panic attacks and they're worried about the next time they're going to have a panic attack. But again, you don't necessarily see them doing what you might identify traditionally as compulsions. What you see is their panic attacks, and you see worry sort of in between the panic attacks about the next one that's going to happen. So I think that you can say individuals with, say, for example, generalized anxiety disorder and panic disorder have anxiety, and maybe sometimes they have thoughts, but they don't have a lot of behaviors. And so it doesn't make sense to say that somebody with generalized anxiety disorder or panic disorder or whatever has OCD. Correspondingly, you have the like just right OCDers who are constantly engaging and re-engaging these routine activities, whether that means they're brushing their teeth over and over again, or they're getting dressed and undressed to get redressed again, and then undressed to get redressed again, or it might be they're moving the seat in the car backward and forward until they feel that they're just exactly in the right place in relationship to the steering wheel. Whatever it is, you know, you see these sort of just right OCDers repeatedly engaging routine activities or repeatedly engaging some kind of ritualistic pattern to achieve a just right feeling. And what you don't necessarily see for these kinds of individuals is what looks like overactive anxiety. What you don't necessarily see is these kinds of intrusive thoughts that might be typical of somebody with obsessive compulsive disorder, and you could say certainly is going to be happening for someone with some kind of overactive anxiety system. They're going to have alarming perceptions, or you might say intrusive thoughts, in relationship to which their anxiety is happening. And so I think that on a practical level, it makes sense that individuals sort of, again, stereotypically distinguish between anxiety systems and OCD. And I, like on the ground floor, I don't have a problem necessarily with individuals making what really are erroneous distinctions. The problem is, as a practitioner, it is to your pretty significant disadvantage to fail to understand that really it's all one animal. It's all one phenomenon that's happening. And the reason I say that it's to your disadvantage is because if you're not swinging at the right ball, as you've heard me say many times, you're not going to get on base. Or to put it a different way, if you're minoring on the majors, you're not going to make a lot of progress. You're not going to be successful. To my mind, it goes back to the cognitive model. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a little while, you're fairly informed on what that is. To say it simply, the cognitive model is that thoughts, or you might say perceptions, elicit feelings. And we can all think of examples of this. Sometimes to patients, I'll ask, have you ever been in a sort of a social kind of situation where you're remembering a joke or you're remembering something that happened earlier in the day or whatever it is, and you're laughing or you're smiling, and socially you realize it's an inappropriate moment to be laughing or smiling. I've found myself in that kind of position before, and what I'll instinctively do when I find myself in such a position is I'll think of my brother in the casket coming up on 26 years ago. And immediately the smile leaves my face. I'm no longer laughing because thoughts elicit feelings. I remember the specifics of what he was wearing and what his face looked like and how his nose and his forehead and and the shape of his chest and his stomach. And a lot of it just looked really different. And so recognizing that thoughts elicit feelings, I can kind of manipulate my emotions by changing what I'm thinking about in order to change the way I feel in the moment. You follow what I'm meaning to say. And that's because thoughts elicit feelings. Whether that thought is, what if I'm a pedophile, or what if I am a danger to the community? What if I'm going to kill somebody? What if I'm dirty? Whether that thought is some kind of image, moving motion image or still image, whether that thought is an urge of whatever kind, thoughts elicit feelings. And then thoughts and feelings together shape behavioral choices in the moment. So you take any one of those examples. What if I run somebody over with my car? Well, that's an intrusive thought that is going to elicit anxiety for most people anyway. And then so the thought and the feeling together shape the behavior of, well, I'm going to drive really slowly, or I'm going to really be careful to drive in the very, very middle of the lane, or I'm going to ask somebody else to drive, or whatever it might be, because thoughts and feelings shape behavioral choices. And the truth of it is that over time, these sort of intermittent choices become patterns, or you could say habits. The more we engage these choices in the moment, the more they become patterns over time. And the point here is, behavioral patterns reinforce the thoughts and the feelings that we have in the situations that we face. So if you take that idea of the cognitive model and you zoom out from an individual example and you look at something like generalized anxiety disorder or panic disorder versus something like just right OCD, what you end up seeing is that there are thoughts and feelings and behavioral choices. There are behavioral patterns that reinforce thoughts and feelings in all of these cases. In the case of generalized anxiety disorder, you get a lot of what-if thoughts. Sometimes there'll be some images that are thrown in. Of course, there's the overactive alarm system, or you might say the anxiety that's elicited by the thought. But maybe you say, well, where's the behavior? You said earlier that individuals with generalized anxiety disorder don't tend to do a lot of what we might call compulsions. So what behaviors are happening for people with generalized anxiety disorder? The answer is, well, they ruminate. They'll sometimes seek reassurance from other people, but a lot of what they're doing is reassuring themselves. They're planning their future moves. How will I cope with this? What am I going to do in that situation? They're imagining what this or that moment is going to be like. And like I say, planning what their response is going to be as a means of trying to quell or manage the distress that's happening within them. So you still have thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And of course, those behaviors over time become patterns. And the point of it is that those patterns are reinforcing the thoughts and the feelings. That is to say that the individual elements become parts of a system that work together. The more an individual ruminates, the more sensitive he or she becomes in terms of future intrusive thoughts and anxiety that is caused by them. And you for sure see the same thing happening within panic disorder. Now, it's true that sometimes in panic disorder, people have panic attacks because of the thoughts that they have. And so the panic attack will simply be a wave of intense anxiety that happens in relationship to, or that's elicited by the thought. But other times, and I think that this is more common actually within the construct and community of panic disorder, is that individuals have panic attacks so often that they begin associating the physical sensations that they have when they have panic attacks with the panic attacks themselves. So even if they're not necessarily anxious at a given moment, and they begin to notice their heart is beating a little bit faster, or their breathing has changed and it feels maybe more like it's hyperventilation or whatever it is, or they start to feel dizzy or somewhat sweaty inexplicably, this or these sensations can elicit panic attacks. And maybe you'd say, well, that doesn't sound like a thought. But the truth of it is that the thought is the perception of the sensation. There's a perception of it. There's an experience of it. And the thought reflexively becomes, I'm having a panic attack. And that's all that's needed to elicit unpredictable and intense anxiety. And as a result, individuals will engage methodical and repetitive avoidance patterns. They'll identify the kinds of activities or situations or places wherein they have had panic attacks in the past, and they'll work pretty carefully to avoid those kinds of situations in the future. And for some people, the panic disorder can become so bad that they end up being relegated to their homes. And the idea of even leaving the house becomes itself really, really scary. This is what's called agoraphobia. So sometimes you see panic disorder with agoraphobia. And in this case, it's not hard at all to see the behavioral pattern that's reinforcing the not just the sensations, but also the thoughts and feelings. And that extraordinarily pronounced behavioral pattern is avoidance. But on the flip side of things, when you're looking at something like OCD and you see these repetitive behaviors, don't let it throw you. It's not like there are no intrusive thoughts and there's no anxiety happening. I mean, I have had a number of people through the years say I have OCD, but I don't really have anxiety. And it's like, well, let's identify the compulsions that you're doing. And we'll have a bit of a conversation about whatever it might be, the checking or the repetitive doing and redoing, whatever it is that we're talking about in terms of what is the ritualistic pattern. And when I say, well, let's imagine you didn't do that. Let's imagine you stopped doing and redoing. Let's imagine that you stopped checking and you resisted that behavior, and you resisted it so hard that you prevented it from happening. How do you think you'd feel if you didn't engage that or those behaviors? And pretty typically the response comes, well, I'd be really uncomfortable, or, well, I wouldn't be able to do that. And if I were to push a bit more, well, let's imagine you did. Let's imagine you really, really resisted and prevented the behavior, maybe not just for a moment, but like over a course of minutes and even into an hour and a couple of hours, you were really, really working to not engage these behaviors. How do you think you'd feel? Like I say, I wouldn't be able to do that. And I guess if I found myself in that position, I would be really, really uncomfortable. I'd be really, really uncomfortable. So it's like, we're talking now about distress. So we're sort of backing into it. But the idea becomes, if we were to put down these behaviors, then what we'd find sort of underneath of them would be some hidden anxiety that's being meticulously managed by these repetitive behaviors. And from here, it's not hard to see, like, if I were to not do those behaviors, I'd be very uncomfortable. And the thoughts become, well, if I don't do that, I'm not going to be able to relax, or if I don't do that, I'm never going to be comfortable until I can do it again. And so now you've, there you go. Now you've got thoughts. And I don't mean to say that these are the only thoughts that are happening, but certainly in this moment, you've got clearly identifiable intrusive thoughts that are eliciting distress, and as a collective result of which, individuals are engaging repetitive behaviors. So you very clearly have the OCD system, even though individuals are only aware of rituals. And of course, for some OCDers, it's the opposite. They'll say, well, I'm just, what do they say? I'm puro. And it's like, dude, you're not puro. The literature has long identified puro as a myth, despite the fact that that sort of nomenclature comes up over and over and over again. The truth of it is, puro OCDers do have Cs, they do have compulsions, and just like the generalized anxiety disorder community, these guys and gals are engaging compulsions in the form of rumination. So there's mental rituals. And I'll go a step further, even without a patient in front of me and a particular person in mind, I'll say in the vast majority of pure O cases, there are motor compulsions that are happening. There's obviously the mental compulsive pattern of ritual of rumination going on. But very typically, there's some subtle motor compulsions too. You might see the leg bouncing going on, or you might see some kind of like skin picking or finger picking or fingernail picking or teeth like jaw clenching or something like this. You might see like some kind of knuckle cracking, and I can hear people objecting, well, those aren't compulsions. Those are just things that I do when I'm nervous or whatever it might be. But it's like, go back to the definition of compulsion, and very clearly, you know, your leg bouncing, your knuckle cracking, your whatever it is, your fingernail picking, these are behaviors that you're engaging for the purpose of trying to manage the anxiety. The definition doesn't use the term express, but I don't think that the idea of expressing anxiety is fully alien to the idea of trying to manage it. It seems almost like we could say these are synonymous concepts, right? And so people that are picking or bouncing or clinching or whatever it is, these might be very subtle, admittedly, and non-traditional or non-stereotypic behaviors relative to something like OCD. But the point of it is that you're still seeing motor compulsions along with what is obviously the mental compulsion of rumination within the construct and context of this so-called pure OCD. So like this overview that we're talking about, whether we're talking about GAD or generalized anxiety disorder, which, man, I've long said, I think that is a bullshit disorder. And I mean, I'm not trying to knock anybody who's got anxiety. I mean, I have anxiety too. And I certainly don't mean to be insensitive or to in some way discard your experience. I'm just saying, I think that is like a super, super overdiagnosed condition. So when we're talking about this sort of overview across anxiety-related diagnostic categories, and we're talking about the cognitive model, there are admittedly different ways therapeutically to approach the treatment of these kinds of conditions. But to go back to, for example, the person who's got the just right pattern going on, and you were to say, well, if you were to stop that, and if you were to really work to resist and prevent it, and not just once or twice, but over the course of 45 to 60 to 90 minutes, 2 hours, 3 hours, eventually into a day. And I don't mean to say that you would do it absolutely perfectly, but what if for the most part you didn't engage these behaviors and you were really serious about it? Let's just imagine for a moment or two that you were really serious about it and you really worked to not do it. Well, yeah, okay, so I'd have anxiety and I'd have thoughts about the anxiety's not going to go away and I'm not going to feel comfortable and all this business. Fair enough. But if you were to sort of see that through and keep following that pathway for 24 to 48 to even 72 hours, like what's your gut feeling? What do you think would eventually happen to the anxiety? Do you think it would change at all? Do you think there would be even a small decrease over a longer period of time? Because I don't think that there's any surprise here that like the anxiety would skyrocket, maybe you'd say at first. But if you were to see that through, do you think that the anxiety would eventually change? And most people, I mean, the vast majority of people are going to say, yeah, I mean, eventually it would start to subside. I mean, eventually it would decrease and maybe come back to something of a baseline, and the baseline being still some fairly elevated anxiety. But then if we were to continue on still longer resisting these behaviors, do you think that eventually the anxiety would even dip down below your baseline? Do you think that you would begin to feel eventually maybe even a little bit more comfortable than the baseline? Do you think your anxiety would fall from a 30 to a 35, say, for example, out of 100, down to a 25? Do you think that it would eventually fall from a 25 down to a 23 or a 20? Or do you think it would drop maybe even lower the longer you were resisting and preventing this same old repetitive pattern? And the reason I say it this way is because you have way more control over your behavioral response than you do over your thoughts and your anxiety. Like, you have practical control over compulsions, over behavioral choices. Whether we're talking about rumination or jaw clenching or leg bouncing or checking or seeking reassurance or providing reassurance to yourself, I mean, whatever the behavioral response is that you're identifying within your own system. And when I say is, I really should say whatever the behavioral responses are, because mark my words, you've got more than one. Even if you're only aware of one, you've got more than one. You've got a pocket full of kryptonite, right? And you've got to work to identify all of these responses. Like I say, you're armed with a definition. And the definition is a pretty broad place, that's true. But if the behavior fits within that definition, then it needs to have a target on its back. You need to be actively working to begin to resist, and over time to curtail, and eventually to really work hard at preventing that behavior. And again, like, nobody's perfect, and I'm not trying to suggest to you that you should be perfect, but I am meaning to say that you should strive to always resist and prevent that behavior, while recognizing, of course, that you're not going to be perfect at that. And this is the point, that like, where those behaviors are kryptonite to you, resisting them, preventing them consistently over time is kryptonite to your anxiety. Well, that's it for another episode of OCD Straight Talk. Feel free to reach out with any questions you might have to chrislines04@gmail.com. If you found the podcast helpful, consider giving it a 5-star rating or subscribing to OCD Straight Talk for structured help with your anxiety or OCD symptoms.